Ever wonder what makes your heart tick? I mean, literally, tick.
That's a question that's fascinated people for centuries.
Well, we're about to take a deep dive into the world of cardiac physiology, how this incredible pump keeps us going 24/7. And we've got this awesome companion guide from a Queen's University physiology course.
PHGY 215, to be exact. It's like a roadmap to understanding one of the most vital organs in the human body.
We're talking structure, rhythm, regulation. The whole nine yards.
It's way more fascinating than you might think, trust me.
So first things first, why should we even care about cardiac physiology?
Well, think about it this way.
Okay.
Your body is like a bustling city, right?
Lots going on.
Exactly. You need roads, delivery trucks, power lines, a whole infrastructure to keep things running.
Makes sense.
And that's essentially what the circulatory system is for your body. It's the intricate network of highways and byways that transport everything our cells need to thrive. Oxygen, nutrients, hormones, you name it.
And the heart is the engine driving all that traffic, right?
Precisely. It's the powerhouse that keeps this whole delivery system moving. It's not just pumping blood, it's pumping life into every corner of your being.
Wow, I never thought of it like that. But wait, isn't the heart just one big pump?
Ah, that's where it gets even more interesting. Think of it as a dynamic duo, a double pump.
Okay, two for the price of one.
Exactly. Each side with a very specific job. The right side sends blood to the lungs to pick up oxygen, and the left side takes that freshly oxygenated blood and delivers it to the rest of the body.
So it's like a relay race.
Exactly.
Blood goes from heart to lungs, back to the heart, and then out to the body.
You got it. But here's the kicker. It's not just a one-way street. Within the body, blood is flowing to all the organs simultaneously. It's like a parallel circuit, ensuring that every cell gets what it needs.
It's like a superhighway system with multiple lanes and exits, all perfectly synchronized.
Now you're getting it. Okay, so now let's zoom in on the heart's design, its internal architecture. Think four chambers, two atria, and two ventricles.
So the atria are like the entryways,
yeah.
Receiving chambers.
Exactly. They collect blood coming back from the body and the lungs. Then you've got the ventricles, the heavy lifters. Those are the pumping chambers. They propel the blood out to its destination, either the lungs for oxygen or the rest of the body.
Makes sense. But how does the heart make sure the blood goes in the right direction? I mean, you don't want any traffic jams in there.
That's where the heart valves come in, the traffic cops of the heart. Imagine them as one-way doors, making sure everyone's moving in the right direction and preventing any backflow.
So they're pretty crucial for smooth operation.
Absolutely. Problems with these valves can lead to all sorts of trouble leaks, blockages, you name it.
Yikes.
Speaking of smooth operation, let's talk about the muscle that makes it all happen. Cardiac muscle.
Isn't that just like any other muscle in our body? I mean, you can exercise it and make it stronger, right?
Well, sort of. It's striated like skeletal muscle, the kind you use to lift weights or go for a run. But here's the cool part. Cardiac muscle cells are connected by these little tunnels called gap junctions. Yeah, think of them as tiny little passageways that allow electrical signals to zip from one cell to the next, creating a wave of synchronized contractions.
So it's like a team of synchronized swimmers, all moving together to create that powerful heartbeat.
That's a great analogy. And all of this is happening within a protective sac called the pericardium. It acts like a lubricated cushion, preventing friction as the heart beats tirelessly day in and day out.
Okay, so we've got the heart's role in the big picture, its internal layout, and the muscle that powers it all. But what about the rhythm? How does the heart know when to beat?
That's where the heart's electrical system comes in. It's a network of specialized cells that act like the conductors of an orchestra, setting the tempo and keeping the rhythm flowing.
So the heart has its own built-in metronome.
You could say that. The sinoatrial node, or SA node for short, is the heart's pacemaker. It's a cluster of cells that generates electrical impulses, spreading them through the atria and causing them to contract.
So it's like the spark that ignites the whole process?
Exactly. Then the signal reaches the atrioventricular node, or AV node.
Okay.
Think of it as a relay station. It slows down the signal just a bit, giving the ventricles time to fill up with blood before they contract.
Like a perfectly timed pause in a musical composition.
You got it. From the AV node, the signal races down a pathway called the bundle of His, then branches out through the Purkinje fibers, and finally reaches the ventricular muscle, causing those powerful chambers to contract and pump blood out to the body.
Wow, it's like a perfectly choreographed electrical dance. All perfectly timed to make sure everything happens in the right order.
It really is. And this electrical activity is what we can actually see on an electrocardiogram, or ECG. It's a powerful tool that allows doctors to peek into the heart's electrical symphony, detecting any irregular rhythms or potential problems.
So it's like listening to the heartbeat through a microphone.
Exactly. Each wave on the ECG, from the P wave to the QRS complex to the T wave, represents a specific electrical event in the heart's cycle. It's a language that tells a story about the heart's health and performance.
It's incredible how much information is packed into those little squiggly lines.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the electrical signals sparking the heart into action. But how do those signals actually translate into the pumping, the squeeze that sends blood surging through our bodies?
That's where the cardiac cycle comes in.
Okay.
The heart's rhythmic two-step. Relax and fill, contract and pump. It's this continuous sequence of contraction and relaxation that makes up each and every heartbeat.
So two phases, diastole and systole, right? Diastole is the relaxation phase when the heart fills with blood, and systole is the powerhouse contraction.
You nailed it. And within this cycle, there are these brief moments called isovolumetric contraction and relaxation. Think of it this way.
Okay.
All the heart valves slam shut, and for a split second, the volume of blood in the ventricles stays the same. It's all about pressure changes, building up the force needed for that powerful ejection of blood.
It's like building up pressure in a water balloon before it explodes.
Exactly. And speaking of explosions, what about that iconic lub-dub sound? Is that connected to all this pressure action?
I was just about to ask about that.
Well, you're right. It is connected. It's the sound of those heart valves slamming shut at just the right moment. The lub is the atrioventricular valves closing at the beginning of systole, and the dub is the semilunar valves snapping shut as the ventricles relax.
It's like a percussion section, keeping time with the heart's rhythm.
I like that. And sometimes you might hear extra sounds like murmurs. These can be caused by a variety of factors, but often it's due to problems with those crucial valves, creating turbulent blood flow that throws on the rhythm of that lub-dub beat.
So those extra sounds can be important clues for doctors, hinting at potential issues.
Absolutely. Now, think about this for a second. Your heart isn't just beating randomly. It's responding to your body's needs, speeding up when you're exercising, slowing down when you're resting.
Mm-hmm.
How does it know how much blood to pump at any given moment?
That's a great question. It's like the heart has its own internal GPS, knowing exactly where to deliver the goods.
Exactly. That's where cardiac output comes in. It's the measure of how much blood the heart pumps per minute. Think of it as the heart's performance metric, a gauge of its efficiency.
Got it.
And it all boils down to two key factors, heart rate and stroke volume.
Okay, so heart rate is the number of beats per minute. That's pretty straightforward.
Right.
But what about stroke volume? What exactly is that?
Stroke volume is the amount of blood pumped out with each individual beat. And one of the key players in regulating stroke volume is this incredible mechanism called the Frank-Starling mechanism.
The Frank-Starling mechanism.
Yeah, it's a brilliant self-regulating system within the heart itself.
You mentioned this earlier, something about stretching.
Right. It's basically like stretching a rubber band. The more you stretch it, the harder it snaps back, right?
Yeah.
Well, the Frank-Starling law basically states that the more the heart muscle is stretched during filling, that is, the more blood it receives, the stronger the contraction will be, leading to a larger stroke volume.
So the heart's basically saying, the more you give me, the more I'll pump out.
Exactly. It's a self-adjusting system, making sure supply meets demand. And of course, we can't forget about the role of the nervous system in all of this.
Right, the nervous system.
It plays a crucial role in fine-tuning both heart rate and stroke volume. Think of it like this.
Okay.
The sympathetic nervous system, that fight or flight response, is like the heart's gas pedal revving things up when we need a boost of energy. And the parasympathetic nervous system is the brake, slowing things down when we need to chill.
So it's this constant interplay between these two branches of the nervous system that keeps our heart beating at just the right pace.
Precisely. No matter what life throws our way.
This is absolutely fascinating. It's amazing how all these systems work together, constantly adjusting and fine-tuning to keep us going. But I have to ask, all this pumping action must require a ton of energy.
Mm.
How does the heart itself get the fuel it needs to keep running this marathon?
That's a great question. And that's where we'll pick up in part two of our deep dive, exploring the heart's own dedicated fuel lines, the coronary arteries.
Welcome back. We've been on quite the journey through the heart so far, from its role as a superhighway system to that electrical symphony that keeps it beating.
And now we're going to delve into the heart's own fueling station, those vital coronary arteries we touched on earlier.
Right, because even the most powerful engine needs a reliable source of fuel. So tell me, how do these coronary arteries work? I mean, where do they even come from?
Well, it's like the heart has its own VIP lane for fuel delivery. These arteries branch directly off the aorta, you know.
The aorta, the main artery.
Yeah, the main artery carrying that oxygen-rich blood from the heart.
Right.
And these coronary arteries, they form a network, kind of like a web, that wraps around the entire heart muscle, constantly supplying it with oxygen and all those essential nutrients it needs.
So the heart has its own dedicated blood supply. Separate from the blood, it's pumping to the rest of the body.
Exactly. It's like a dedicated pit crew just for the heart. And here's the really fascinating part. The timing of this fuel delivery is crucial, you see. Most of the blood flow through these coronary arteries happens during diastole. You remember diastole, right?
Diastole. That's the relaxation phase, right?
You got it. When the heart muscle is taking a break.
So it's like the heart is taking advantage of that downtime to refuel, sort of like a pit stop during a race.
Perfect analogy. Because during systole, you know.
When the heart is contracting.
Exactly. Those coronary arteries are actually getting a bit squeezed, you know.
Really?
Yeah, they're partially compressed.
Huh.
And plus, the aortic valve is open during systole, which also partially blocks the entrance to the coronary arteries. So it just makes sense that blood flow would be much more efficient when the heart is taking a breather.
It's like waiting for a gap in traffic before merging onto the highway.
Exactly. Now, here's a question for you. How does the heart make sure it gets enough fuel when demand increases? Like when we're exercising and our heart rate goes up?
Yeah, that's a good question. You'd think it would need a lot more energy when it's working harder. Does it send out some kind of SOS signal?
Well, you're actually not far off. The body has this incredibly sophisticated system for regulating coronary blood flow. And it all comes down to this clever little molecule called adenosine.
Adenosine. Hmm. Doesn't that have something to do with caffeine?
You got it. Caffeine actually blocks adenosine receptors, which is why it can give us that energy boost.
Right.
But in the heart, adenosine actually acts as a signal molecule. When the heart's metabolic activity ramps up, it naturally produces more adenosine.
Okay.
And as those adenosine levels rise, they cause the coronary arteries to dilate, you know, widen, allowing more blood to flow through.
So it's like the heart is saying, hey, I need more fuel here. Open up the pipes.
Exactly. It's a perfect example of how the body uses these feedback loops to keep everything in balance.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. But unfortunately, we all know that things can go wrong with the heart, right? We were talking about those heart murmurs earlier, those extra sounds that can indicate valve problems. But what about more serious issues like heart attacks? Are those related to these coronary arteries too?
That's a great question, and unfortunately, yes. Heart attacks, or what we call myocardial infarctions in the medical world, are often the result of blockages in these coronary arteries.
Yep. Blockages.
Yeah. You see, over time, plaque, this buildup of cholesterol, fat, and other stuff, can accumulate on the artery walls. Like, it kind of sticks to them, you know?
Oh, so it's like a buildup of gunk that gradually narrows those pathways.
That's a good way to put it. And as those arteries narrow, obviously the blood flow gets restricted. Now, if a blood clot were to form in one of these already narrowed arteries, it can completely block the flow of blood to a portion of the heart muscle. And that's when you get a heart attack. Because that blockage essentially deprives the heart tissue of oxygen, which can cause serious damage, even death of the heart muscle.
That's scary. So keeping those coronary arteries clear and healthy is crucial for preventing heart attacks. What can we do to keep those arteries nice and clean and functioning the way they should?
Well, that's a whole other topic we could spend hours discussing, but I'll give you the quick version. Lifestyle plays a huge role here. Things like diet, exercise, not smoking, managing stress, they all have a major impact on the health of your heart and blood vessels.
So it's all about making healthy choices.
Pretty much, just like with every other aspect of our health, right?
Right. But I want to circle back to those heart sounds for a moment. We were talking about the lub-dub and those extra sounds, like murmurs that can indicate valve problems.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through how those sounds are actually created? What's happening inside the heart to produce those sounds?
Yeah. Remember how we talked about the heart valves acting like those one-way doors, making sure the blood flows in the right direction?
Yeah, the traffic cops.
Exactly. Well, those doors actually make a sound when they slam shut.
So the lub-dub is literally the sound of those valves closing.
Exactly. The first sound, the lub, that happens when the atrioventricular valves, those are the mitral and tricuspid valves, they slam shut at the beginning of systole. That's the contraction phase, remember? So it's the sound of those valves snapping shut to prevent blood from flowing back into the atria as the ventricles contract.
So it's like they're bracing for impact as the ventricles tower up. And what about the dub?
Ah, the dub. That's the sound of the other set of valves, the semilunar valves. These are located at the exits of the ventricles where the aorta and pulmonary artery branch off.
Right. The aorta sends blood out to the body and the pulmonary artery sends it to the lungs.
Exactly. So those semilunar valves, they slam shut at the end of systole, you know?
As the ventricles start to relax.
Exactly. To prevent blood from flowing back from those major arteries into the ventricles.
So we've got these two sets of doors created that rhythmic lub-dub beat, the soundtrack of a healthy heart. But you mentioned that murmurs can kind of mess up this beat. What's causing those extra sounds?
Well, murmurs are often described as like a whooshing or swishing sound, and they happen when the blood flow through the heart isn't as smooth as it should be. Kind of like rapids in a river, you know? The turbulent flow creates noise.
So it's like hearing turbulence in the flow of blood.
Exactly. And this turbulence can be caused by a variety of things, but very often it's a problem with those heart valves. Remember stenosis.
Stenosis, those are the narrowed valves, right?
And regurgitation, the leaky valves.
Right, like trying to squeeze a river through a narrow canyon or a leaky faucet.
Exactly. So even though those murmurs might sound pretty subtle, they can be very important clues for doctors. They signal that something might be up with those crucial valves.
It's incredible how much information you can get just from listening to the heart.
Yeah.
But shifting gears a bit here, we've talked about how the heart beats, how it pumps blood, and how those valves direct traffic. But how do we measure the heart's overall performance? How do we know how effectively it's actually doing its job?
Well, that's where cardiac output comes back into play, remember?
It's how much blood the heart pumps out per minute.
Right. It's like the heart's report card. It tells us how well it's meeting the body's demands. And we learned that cardiac output is determined by two main things, right?
Heart rate and stroke volume.
You got it. Heart rate's pretty straightforward. It's just the number of beats per minute. But stroke volume, that can be influenced by a bunch of different factors. We were talking about the Frank Starling mechanism earlier.
Right, that incredible self-regulating system.
Exactly. It adjusts the force of contraction based on how much blood is filling the heart. The more blood the heart receives, the more forcefully it contracts, pumping out a larger volume of blood with each beat. It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
It really is. But we can't forget about the nervous system's role in all of this.
Oh, absolutely. Those two branches of the nervous system, the sympathetic and parasympathetic, remember them.
The gas pedal and the brake.
Exactly. They work together to really fine-tune the heart's performance, not just influencing the heart rate, but also the force of the contractions, which directly impacts that stroke volume. It's like having a dynamic duo of conductors, constantly adjusting the heart's rhythm and intensity to meet the body's ever-changing needs.
This is all just blowing my mind. It's amazing how all these different systems work together so seamlessly. But we can't forget about those coronary arteries, those fuel lines, right?
You're absolutely right. And that's exactly where we'll pick up in the final part of our deep dive, exploring the fascinating world of adenosine and its role in regulating coronary blood flow. And we'll also touch on the risks associated with blockages in those vital arteries.
Welcome back for the final part of our deep dive into the heart. We've covered a lot of ground so far.
We have. From those busy chambers and valves to the incredible electrical symphony, we've really explored the heart's inner workings.
And now we're zeroing in on the heart's own energy source.
Yeah.
Those coronary arteries. They're like the lifeline, delivering all that oxygen-rich blood to the heart muscle itself.
Why, we were talking earlier about how those arteries have a pretty clever way of making sure the heart gets enough fuel when it needs it most, especially when we're exercising and our heart rate goes up. You mentioned something called adenosine.
Yeah, adenosine. It's like the heart's personal trainer or something, right?
That's a great way to think about it. Adenosine is constantly monitoring the heart's energy levels. So when that heart muscle starts working harder, it produces more adenosine as a byproduct.
So it's like a built-in alarm system.
Exactly. As those adenosine levels rise, it basically tells those coronary arteries to dilate, which means they widen, allowing more blood to flow through.
It's like opening up a fire hydrant to get more water to fight a fire. So the harder the heart works, the more adenosine it produces, and the wider those coronary arteries open.
Precisely. It's this brilliant feedback loop that makes sure the heart always has the fuel it needs to keep pumping strong no matter what. But as we all know, sometimes even the best systems can malfunction.
And that's when we run into problems like heart attacks, right?
Right.
We touched on this before, how blockages in those coronary arteries can be life-threatening.
Unfortunately, you're right. Those coronary arteries, just like any other blood vessel, can develop plaque buildup over time. Plaque is a mixture of things like cholesterol and fat that can actually stick to the artery walls, narrowing those vital pathways.
So it's like a slow buildup of gunk that gradually constricts those fuel lines.
A perfect analogy. And as those arteries narrow, blood flow becomes more and more restricted. If a blood clot forms in one of those narrowed arteries, it can completely block the flow of blood to a section of the heart muscle, and that's what we call a myocardial infarction, a heart attack.
It's like a sudden traffic jam in the heart's energy supply chain.
Yeah.
The consequences can be devastating.
Exactly. The severity of a heart attack really depends on the size and location of that blockage, but it always means damage to the heart muscle.
So keeping those coronary arteries clear and healthy is absolutely vital if we want to prevent heart attacks.
Yeah.
What are some things we can do to lower our risk?
That's the question everyone wants answered, right? And while there's no magic bullet, there are definitely things we can do to improve our heart health and reduce the risk of coronary artery disease.
I'm all ears.
Well, a lot of it boils down to those everyday lifestyle choices. Eating a healthy diet, getting regular exercise, maintaining a healthy weight, not smoking. These are all critical for keeping those blood vessels, including those coronary arteries, in tip-top shape.
So making healthy choices day in and day out, not just for our overall health, but specifically for our hearts.
You got it. And don't forget about those regular checkups with your doctor. They can assess your risk factors and help you come up with a personalized plan to keep that ticker ticking strong.
This has been an absolutely incredible journey. We've explored the heart from the inside out, and it's all so intricately connected. The chambers, the valves, the electrical system, how it pumps, its fuel supply.
Wow, it's a testament to the incredible design of the human body, how all these complex systems work together so seamlessly, all to keep us alive and thriving.
It's definitely given me a whole new appreciation for this amazing organ that's been working tirelessly inside my chest my whole life.
And hopefully our deep dive has given you the knowledge and the motivation to take good care of your own heart. Remember, it's not just a pump, it's the engine of life.
What a beautiful way to put it. Thanks for joining us on this fascinating journey through the world of cardiac physiology. And until next time, keep those hearts beating strong.